What's up, awesome people? Magnificent Monday to you. It's your boy, Coy. This is CNN 10, your one-stop shop for some of the most important headlines of the day in just 10 minutes time. Now, today, we're starting with the latest news on the war in the Middle East involving one of the United States' strongest allies, Israel. On Saturday, Israel launched direct military strikes against Iran. And to better understand what's happening, let's put this event in context. On October 7th of last year, Hamas attacked Israel, leading to Israel's military operations in Gaza, where tens of thousands of Palestinians have been killed, and the situation has been called a humanitarian crisis. And tensions across the entire Middle East region have increased. In April, Iran launched a direct attack against Israel, firing more than 300 drones and missiles. Iran is a supporter of Hamas and other groups opposed to Israel, like Hezbollah, a powerful group in Lebanon, where Israel also launched a ground invasion this year. Iran said their attack was in response to a strike on an Iranian diplomatic building in Syria that Iran blamed on Israel. Iran then fired ballistic missiles at Israel on October 2nd. And that brings us to Saturday, when Israel launched military strikes against Iran. The operation involved three waves of targeted airstrikes against military sites in different parts of Iran. Iran's leader said Israel's attack should not be exaggerated or downplayed, and President Biden urged the end of direct conflict between the two countries. But you might be wondering what happens next. Well, both countries have indicated this could be the end of their direct military exchanges. The impact of these events on the region and the world remains to be seen. This is especially important as the war in Gaza continues and calls for a ceasefire and a release of hostages grow. CNN correspondent Alex Marquardt has more.
Israel announced in the early hours of Saturday morning that their military operation against Iran was over after striking military targets in different parts of the country. The targets, according to Israel's military, included missile manufacturing facilities as well as surface-to-air missile systems. Sources told CNN that there were three waves of Israeli airstrikes, and Iranian media said that military sites in three different provinces were hit, but they claimed limited damage. The United States had pressured Israel to not strike Iran's nuclear or oil facilities, fearing greater escalation in the region and an impact on the global economy. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu appears to have complied. Following Israel's operation, a senior U.S. administration official told reporters that, quote, "This should be the end of this direct exchange of fire between Israel and Iran." The official also said that the strikes were carefully prepared, as well as being extensive, targeted, and precise. Israel strikes were in response to the October 1st Iranian barrage of some 180 ballistic missiles directly fired at Israel. For the past 3 weeks, Israel has been preparing its response in coordination with the United States, though Washington made clear it did not participate in Israel's operation. What comes next remains very much to be seen. What the damage in Iran looks like, whether the Iranian regime retaliates in some way, and what impact this may have on the other fronts in the region, in Lebanon and in Gaza.
Pop quiz hot shot. What's the biggest desert in the world? Gobi Desert, Sahara Desert, Arabian Desert, or the Antarctic? Due to its dry, harsh conditions, the Antarctic ice shelf is the largest desert in the world, leaving the Sahara Desert as the world's largest hot desert.
New drone footage shot in southeastern Morocco reveals rare flooding in the Sahara Desert. Rain is not unheard of in this part of the Sahara, but occurs at a rate of just a few inches a year. Morocco's meteorology agency told AP in early October that it's been, quote, 30 to 50 years since they've experienced this much rainfall. The Sahara is the world's largest nonpolar desert, stretching across 3.6 million square miles.
Each fall, when North Carolina becomes nature's art gallery, as millions of trees burst into vibrant shows of reds, oranges, yellows, drawing tourists from around the world. But this year, the aftermath of Hurricane Helene, a major Category 4 storm that made landfall in late September, has left communities facing a different reality. From historic hotels to local art galleries, business owners are struggling to rebuild while tourism dollars have slowed significantly. Up next, we're learning how these mountain communities are fighting to preserve their livelihoods one reservation at a time.
A lot of times when there's tragedy, people hype it up for a few days, and then it falls to the wayside. We can't be forgotten.
Weeks after Hurricane Helene hit, business owners here in Western North Carolina are working overtime to rebuild. Any other year, and things would be booked solid all fall season.
This flood hit 27. I mean, you can see the flood water mark.
A half hour north of Asheville, Josh Copas had turned an old jail into a popular hotel and restaurant.
We've done $18,000 of refunds so far. So I'm like taking the money that we've raised for rebuilding the restaurant and just using it to refund the hotel rooms. Fall in Appalachia is pure magic. Our color in the leaves is like world famous. For a lot of the businesses in this region, that's the moneymaker.
Without tourists, communities in Western North Carolina will be out $2.1 billion in revenue this year. Jacob Sessoms co-owns several businesses in the area, with only one restaurant open. His biggest problem is a pretty expensive one, and it's affecting everyone.
The lack of potable water is keeping a lot of people from opening. So we have a 2,100-gallon cistern filled on a daily basis with potable water that has to be tested twice a day. The cost to lease the equipment and pay for the water is greater than $600 a day. It is a large expense for a small restaurant, but you can only imagine if the population's paychecks have stopped. All the furniture down here was destroyed, ruined, washed everywhere. And you can still see the dust from the mud removal. The question is, what do we rebuild? What shouldn't be rebuilt? What is too close to the river?
This building, the water was to the second floor, and now all you see is rubble and leftover artwork. I believe it's over 300 artists. They're gonna need help because nobody's walking around here buying their art. The best way to support any local business here that has an online shop, definitely go online.
Like, book a room, buy a gift card, buy a t-shirt. I'm gonna reopen as soon as possible.
All right, these days robots can do a lot. They can serve you lunch, drive your car, and now a new robot is playing in a symphony orchestra. This mechanical maestro is taking center stage, and some orchestras may need to update their dress code policy to include some metal. Our 10 out of 10 story today features a unique musician that's more circuit board than concert hall. But don't let that fool you. This robotic cellist is no mere wind-up act.
This may be the first ever robot to play alongside a symphony orchestra, according to Reuters.
There's obviously a lot of self-playing pianos, but the string instrument is so intricate, so I was, you know, very curious about how it actually works.
The robot, which was designed by researcher and composer Fredrik Gran, played at Sweden's Malmö Live Concert Hall on October 17th. Gran programmed the robot using the musical score that was written for it.
It's kind of liberating to go beyond the human anatomy when you think about what to write for a cello. Musical notation is basically like code. So my musical notation actually became transcribed as code. Acoustic music played by robots will definitely be an art form or a platform for itself, but I don't think it will ever replace live musicians.
All right, Team 10, keep bringing that awesome energy and curiosity to everything you do because you make the world a better and brighter place. Now, I want to go ahead and do my favorite part of the day, and that is shout-out time. And today's shout-out goes to Sherrilyn North Junior High School in McAllen, Texas. We see you, and we hope everyone watching around the world has a wonderful one. I'm Coy Wire. I'll see you right back here tomorrow on your CNN 10.